Right, hello, and today I'm very fortunate to have Lloyd Stephen Attrell.
The full name.
Welcome, good afternoon, how are you?
Great to be here, Andy. Thank you so much for having me.
You're more than welcome, my man, you're more than welcome. So I've got a few notes here, and there's nothing contentious yet, hopefully not. And just go with the flow, really. So what I put here, Isle of Wight. Born and bred?
Born and bred on the island, yeah, as we call it, as local
yeah.
people.
Is there a nickname for us sort of people on the mainland? Because I think the Manx over in the Isle of Man or something. Are we Grockles or something?
I don't know.
I thought when I was younger, there was like people on the mainland were Grockles or something.
Just mainlanders for us, I
think. Is it really?
About that, yeah.
Because all I knew about the Isle of Wight is it had a prison.
Yeah, three prisons.
Is there three prisons?
There's three prisons, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay, so you went to school there?
Not at the prison, no.
No. On the have you ever visited the prison, no?
I haven't, no. There's some videos of people sneaking in and break, because they've closed one or two of them now, and there's only one kind of fully functional, so people do, like, when they break into the prison and do videos around it. And that's the only time I've seen it, is online for a video someone's recorded.
Because I've not really seen the Isle of Wight. It's supposed to be lovely. Really
it's beautiful, lovely. Yeah. I wouldn't live anywhere else. I just absolutely love the sea. A big part of what I do is like water sports alongside pickleball. So absolutely love surfing, sailing, that sort of stuff.
Oh, wonderful. That was going to be one of my questions later.
Okay, I'll leave it until then.
So more interestingly, I did a little bit of research.
Okay.
So you were born in October.
Yeah.
No, which is a great month because I was born in October. So I wanted to know which day in October.
So the 21st.
Oh, okay. I'm on the 15th.
You're the 15th. Okay. I think I've got a couple of friends.
What's frightening is that the year you were born compared to mine, I'm not even going to say it. Just put it this way.
Yeah.
You're the same age as my eldest son. So anyway.
Okay.
So the main thing here I've got, the pickleball store.
Yes.
Right? That is you.
That is.
And tell me about that journey and how did that all come about, begin? Don't spare anything.
I'll try not to spare any details. So it's actually a story, I guess, quite a few people in the UK would probably have into pickleball. So I first started around 2019, 2020 playing, which you wouldn't believe if you saw me play because I'm not great. Whereas there are people that have joined one or two years ago and they're amazing. I started 2019, 2020, just before lockdown.
Right.
Went on holiday with my family to America and they had been every year. And they were like, there's this sport, people are playing it, you need to play it, you like sport. And at the time I was like, I play a few different types of sports, never played racket sports unless you count Wii tennis.
Wii tennis, yeah.
You can't really, not
well,
the
you
same.
Do handle, you do sort of, yeah. You do have to swing, don't you?
World champion at Wii tennis.
great.
But they basically were like, you need to come along and you need to play the sport. And I was like, oh, okay. So admittedly, I wasn't too keen to play it initially, but myself, my uncle and my cousin and myself got on the court on the first day we arrived in America.
Whereabouts were you in America?
So we went to Florida, obviously, right. Pickleball capital of the world.
Right, yeah.
And we loved it and then have not looked back ever since. We played it for 2 weeks straight on a cruise as well. We went on a cruise.
And they had a court on the cruise?
Yeah, they had a court on the cruise, which was amazing. And that was kind of the first introduction. We had some friends in America that were like, you'd love pickleball. They were in their 70s. One was a lawyer and they were like, you need to play pickleball. It's the sport, it's up and coming, it's massive in America. So we thought,
fastest growing sport in America.
Exactly. So we thought, why not give it a go? And we fell in love with it, and the kind of rest is history on the playing side. But
so
obviously,
that's 2019, 5 years ago.
Yeah, so 2019, I'd say probably December 2019, 2020, January, just before COVID hit.
Just after uni?
So I graduated university in 2017. So I played basketball at university. So completely different.
Very different.
But so that's where it kind of began, the love for pickleball. But coming back to the UK, living on an island, there wasn't a tremendous amount on offer.
Right.
There was one session that they'd run at West Wight Sports Centre where they've grown it massively. But at the time, there was not much on offer. And then obviously COVID hit. Which made it really difficult for anyone to play.
Yeah.
So my friends and I, we bought some cheap stuff from Amazon and didn't have a clue how to play. I'm just going to put that out there. We didn't know the rules. We basically stood at the back and played tennis.
Yeah.
Not Wii tennis, but tennis.
Yeah, mini tennis.
And
overarm serves, were you doing all that?
We weren't, no. We did know that part from people telling us how not to do it when we played in America.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, we absolutely loved it. We played probably once or twice a week during that kind of strange period of COVID. And that's really how the idea began for it. I went to buy my first paddle, bought a paddle, it snapped in the first kind of two uses. And I was like, right, okay. And that was just a cheap one. It was only 30, 40 quid. So I was like, right, okay, I need a better paddle, and just didn't know where to look. And then at the time, there was only one place to look. And I was like, it doesn't really look legitimate. Do you know what? I'm going to just try and...
Was this online?
This was online.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was quite... delusional was maybe the word.
Yeah, yeah.
I was like a bit deluded, just going, do you know what, I could do this better, or the way you like, there's some amazing brands in America, the likes of Selkirk, Yola, Pro XR, Paddle Tech, all these companies in America. I was like, why are they not being represented the way they deserve to be represented?
Yeah,
which is really how the store started. So in August 2022 we began the journey, or I began the journey of phoning up companies in America and just trying to sell them the vision to say, look, this is what we want to do.
Was this whilst having a job on the side?
Yeah, so I worked full time. I still do part of that job now. So I work full time at the University of Southampton, mentoring student entrepreneurs. That's reduced, so it's really flexible actually now, but I worked full time. So actually the way that America is with the time frames was really useful.
Yeah.
So I would finish work, begin the 2-hour commute back home because it took a while to get back. And when I got home, we'd just start phoning companies.
Just cold calling?
Not really cold calling. We'd set up meetings. Right, some would be a cold call, like I've sent you a meeting. I've sent you an email. I'd like to talk about the idea for the store.
Yeah, yeah.
And some would really like, no, we don't want any. We've got people in the UK. We don't need any more.
Like who? Because obviously you couldn't find them.
Exactly.
So can you tell me who they are?
What brands?
Yeah, yeah. They're talking about, I mean, the brands saying to you no, but you're all going, well, you're looking for paddles, and where do I find them then?
Yeah, and they were like, well, the UK is not a focus point for us.
Right.
It's not big enough at the moment. The focus for us is the US. So it was quite difficult. It was much more difficult than I thought it would be to get to that point.
Right.
But all it took was someone like a Selkirk, like Paddle Tech, to say, do you know what? We're looking for
representation,
and we love what you're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
We think you'd be the right store to do it through.
Oh, wow.
And that's kind of where the journey began. And then we're a year, 18 months in, and it's been amazing. Like, I would not have changed any of that hard work that kind of began the journey to get to here.
Fruits of the reward, you know.
It's
always about the hard work you put in, isn't it, to get to the end?
Yeah, definitely.
So, and it's just purely pickleball stuff, or do you think it'll branch?
No, there's no, like, you see a lot of brands out there, a lot of tennis stores now trying to get into pickleball, racket sports, and they still call the paddle a racket, and it's like, come on, you're selling pickleball paddles.
Yeah.
You've got to be in it for the right reasons. I always say, anyone can sell a pickleball paddle. Selkirk sells themselves, right? Selkirk, Diadem sell themselves. They're really good brands.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, it needs someone that's going to represent them the way they deserve to be represented. And that's what we try to do differently compared to what else exists.
Yeah.
So for us, pickleball is the only focus.
And so you're not wedded to brands. You represent anybody who wants to sell through your shop?
No. We're quite particular with who we do stock, which is really really the opposite of where we began, because to be in the early days, it was like whoever wanted to be in the store, or we want the top brands, but if you believe in us, it'd be great to represent you. Whereas now we're fortunate enough that brands come to us, where you've got the bigger brands that are like, actually, we want to protect how our brand's represented. So for us, a big part of it is how do we actually do that properly? So we are very particular with those brands that we bring on.
When you say we, it's you?
Yeah, so there's three of us.
Oh, there's three of you?
Yeah, yeah. So I say I do most of it. I say we as in, but there's one person that helps with the packing, one person that helps with editing and content and stuff like that. So
great stuff. So that's pretty much... A journey that's getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, it's been amazing, to be fair. Like I said to you when I first arrived, it started as a hobby of, do you know what? I want to bring these brands in. I like the Selkirk paddle, I like Diadem paddles. And then suddenly it spiraled into this where we go to events now and people are like, oh, I've seen you, I've seen the content you've done, and like, oh, I bought my paddle from you, I love it. And it's like the most rewarding thing is hearing that.
And that content is on social media.
Yeah, so I'd say compared to a lot of stores in the UK, we've tried to be more around the content of a paddle. Like I said a minute ago, I think anyone can sell a paddle, but actually me saying to you, oh, T700 raw carbon fiber, reactive polymer honeycomb. Exactly. Yeah. It's all just gibberish to the common person. Well,
do you know, that's the thing. I've had a few people on, I was saying like, okay, I get the support from Diadem, which is great. Shout out to Harvey and his team. But again, like, we've got two paddles here. That's what I was going to ask you. You know, where do people start?
I mean,
most people start, I suppose, they've got a financial, you know, ceiling. You know, they don't want to spend a lot of money. Don't want to probably spend £100 or whatever initially until you fall in love with the sport. And then, of course, it's your tool, isn't it? So you need a best. But where, but for the people, the listeners, the watchers, the viewers, the thousands that we hope that we watch, talk us through paddles in English, if you don't mind.
Okay. So,
because I know you do these 1 minute sort of
things, I do.
But just talk us through sort of the science, the thickness, the differences, so people can understand. Maybe if someone is watching and thinking, oh, which one should I get? Whether not necessarily which brand, but maybe what type first, then a brand.
I mean, I think you kind of hit a bit of a nail on the head to begin with, where people come in with a preconceived price they want to spend.
Yeah.
However, often I don't start with the price. I'll always start with, okay, what are you looking to do within the sport? So if someone's like, I just want to play recreationally, maybe they don't need a £250 paddle.
No.
But if someone says, I say maybe, they probably don't need a £250 paddle.
But maybe they want all the gear with no idea. Some do.
Some do. And I mean, great. If they do, fantastic. Mm. But it's about finding the right paddle and the fit for them. And actually, for beginners, I find speaking to beginners, it's a bit more difficult to try and find the right paddle for them.
Right.
Whereas if you've got someone coming to you that says, I want a paddle with more pop, more spin, you can kind of point them in the direction of based on what they're currently playing with and where they want to take their game.
Yeah.
Whereas a beginner, like, I don't really know what I want to do in the sport. I don't know what's out there. I use a club paddle.
Yeah.
So trying to digest what they are looking for in a paddle is quite difficult.
Right.
And that's why we spend a lot of time doing the videos, and I will sit down and make a lot of phone calls to people to try and help them find the right paddle for them. People will come in and see us as well. So we have a little unit based on the Isle of Wight where people can come and try paddles or have tried paddles.
So is that a shop as well? Or is that not quite there yet?
The dream is yes. We've outgrown what we currently had.
Right.
And it wasn't like a massive store. It was just like 500 square. It was quite small, basically. But it was still, and it still enabled people to come in and try. Whereas that's what we do at events and stuff now.
No, please don't worry. There's no direction. We just go where it goes.
Cool.
But currently you say the shop is on the island. Is that restrictive? Not because
a bit of everything.
The Isle of Wight, but obviously there's probably more population play on the mainland.
Oh yeah, no, massively. There's a lot in the pipeline, which I'll talk about, I'm sure, afterwards. But exactly that. I mean, the footfall in the Isle of Wight, not amazing, not massive. I mean, the footfall anywhere, I think you'd struggle to get the amount of people you'd need through the door. Hence why a big part of that is, okay, how do we make that experience for a shopper online a lot easier and a lot clearer for them to be able to buy the first paddle? And that was, we'll go back to your kind of main question. How do you start from day one if you're looking to buy a pickleball paddle? So first up is find out where you want to take your game. So whether that's you want to compete and you see yourself competing, say, in the English Open.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. In that case, you might want something with a bit more pop, a bit more spin. So you go straight in with a carbon fiber paddle. If I was to start from day one.
Would any of those be representative of what you're talking about?
Not anymore. These are quite old style paddles. They're still great paddles, but there are newer ones out there. And for something like, for example, there's most paddle companies are moving to like a raw carbon fiber. So
is that because they're lighter? Or?
Lighter, more spin. The spin lasts longer. So with something like this and that, they'd probably have, I think, a spray grit on the front.
Yeah.
So the more you play, the lower
the grit starts, a bit like sandpaper. It starts to wear out.
Exactly. I mean, that. Yeah.
So listen, Diadem, you said the paddles are old. We need new ones.
Diadem do some very, very good paddles as well.
They just gave me the old ones.
No comment on that. No comment on that.
Oh, no. So carry on. So carbon fiber is the way forward.
Yep. Well, it's the way most paddle brands are going now. Right. Some are testing some really kind of innovative materials, which will derive from carbon fiber. But most of the brands you see on the market are what they call T700 raw carbon fiber.
Right.
It's like the flexibility of the carbon fiber for a paddle.
Okay. Long handles, short handles?
Yeah, that's another question. It's okay. What racket sport experience do you have, if any? Wii Sports is not usually one we get. But
then if you're starting from nothing, where do you start? I mean, there are some long handle ones. I mean, I've never actually looked at the paddles. We bought, me and my wife, a Bone paddles to start with, sort of a basic one. And then my paddle was a secondhand Diadem one from Christo.
Okay,
That's how it's where I'm at the moment, because I haven't got to that point where am I going to invest in a really, really good paddle. But I'm going to the Open this year, first time. So that's competitive. My wife and I go to the tournament. So it is your tool, isn't it? So if you want to be competitive, you do need to have the right equipment, I think. So
yeah, it definitely helps, because particularly now where when I first started playing, like graphite paddles were all the rage.
Yeah.
This one's got a falcon on. It's amazing. Whereas now it's all around, okay, how much spin can we put on the ball? How much power can we get on the ball? So 2023... was all about power paddles. You saw the likes of like the 6-0 double black diamond. You saw all thermo formed with like Yola's Gen 2. Just stop me if I'm being.
My eyes are glaring because you're talking all the technical stuff. It's good. It's great because obviously there is a lot. This is the thing though, isn't it? It's like there are dozens of car manufacturers. You know, which car do you go and buy? You know, yes, you've got budget. You know, you got look and colors, and then you've got speed and power and all that sort of thing. It is like, where do you go? And talking to Thaddea was saying that for her, equipment is about feel.
Yeah.
And although someone could say, oh yeah, this is technically the best paddle, but if it doesn't feel right for her, she's not going to use it. And I think it's testing stuff out, isn't it? How you feel when you use something. You know, there's a thicker one and a thinner one. And people said the thinner ones are probably more about power.
Yeah, yeah.
And the thicker ones are a bit more about touch and feel. And again, I suppose it depends. I suppose if you're a purist as well, because the game, we have the bangers. You've got I mean, people. We're trying to be taught that, you know, you want to get into long rallies, which means getting into the no volley zone and dinking a lot, and therefore, you know, you want feel and touch. But then you do come up across a lot of people who are playing the game with a lot of power.
Yeah.
And how do you take that off them? You know, does that make a difference with these thicker paddles that have a bit more feel, softens the game? Whereas do you combat like with like?
Yeah, so you'll see a real mix. I mean, when we speak to most players in the UK, there are multiple factors. One is the ball you use.
Yeah.
So a lot of people won't think about the type of ball they use when they buy a paddle.
Are we talking indoor, outdoor?
Yep. Yeah, so if you use like an X40, which you'll use in most Pickleball England competitions...
So hold it there. So an X40.
Yeah.
Indoor and outdoor ball.
Is an outdoor ball.
And does the 40 represent the number of holes?
It does.
Right. So on an outdoor ball, there are more holes?
Yes. So an outdoor ball
slightly, but explain the balls.
Yeah, absolutely. So an outdoor ball will typically have 40 holes, sometimes 38. It's all down to like the aerodynamics of it. And then they will often be heavier to be able to combat windy conditions. Whereas an indoor ball, you'll find, will be lighter and will have less holes, but bigger holes because they don't need to combat wind.
Right. So indoor, what will be like is it like a 20 or 10?
26, 26 holes.
But is it the same number, same surface area, even though there's the same number of holes, or the holes smaller, so you've got actually the same amount of surface area on an outdoor ball as opposed to an indoor ball?
As in what, sorry?
So if you've got, you say outdoor balls like 30 holes or 28.
Yeah, so... But an outdoor's 40 or 38.
So 40 or 38. But even with a 38 one, are the holes slightly smaller so that actually you've got the same amount of plastic on the ball?
Yeah, so it's all around aerodynamics. So Selkirk, for example, have released a new ball which every hole is directly opposite each other. And to be able to do that, they've drilled the holes directly through. It's really like fascinating. I sit down for hours and look through this sort of stuff to try and work out how they've done it. But effectively, yes.
Okay. And because we seem to be using a lot of outdoor balls indoors.
We do, particularly here in the UK. Why? So the biggest reason is because that's what we use at competitions.
Yeah.
And if you play at, you play at David Lloyd, right?
Yeah, the SUPL.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the some of the surfaces they have at David Lloyd, the tennis surface that you mark up with tape, are perfect for outdoor balls. You can get away with playing X40s, and that's what we had at English Nationals. That's what we'll probably have at the Open, if not the rollout mats.
That's what I'm understanding. The Telford, the rollout mats
that
come from India, I think.
Yeah.
The chappie in India makes them.
They do look really cool, and it's nice to play with a dedicated kitchen rather than all the lines you get on the badminton court.
It's confusing, doesn't it?
But we do find players will come to us at these events and go, wow, the ball is so fast, because we're used to playing with like a jug, which is really soft, like a marshmallow. Or is that an indoor? It looks like an indoor
that
ball.
That was one that was bought off Amazon.
Okay.
To have a knockabout at home, you know. But that's just there for decoration, you know.
It looks great. It looks great. But yeah, that would be an indoor ball.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah. And the colours are just there for fun?
Yeah. So the colours, obviously, most of the balls you see have been designed for the US, which I imagine their sports halls are quite different. I've not been in one, but I imagine their sports halls are different, or the places they play are completely different, and they've got dedicated courts. So when we imported some balls to begin with, you've got some blue ones. This is one of the errors we made initially. We've got some blue X26s, which are Franklin indoor balls, and went to use them. And the side of the walls are all blue, so you couldn't see the ball.
Couldn't see them.
No. So it does does have an impact. So a lot of players will use like Gammas, which are really bright, probably one of the best indoor balls in the UK.
The fluorescent yellowy type ones. Yeah.
And now a lot of Headpen 26s, which are the red ones, if you've ever seen those.
Probably. I'm learning a lot about balls at the moment.
Yeah, I did a whole video on balls to use in the UK, but it took me a long time, a lot of outtakes when talking about balls. So it was hopefully a useful video, but it took me ages to do.
Well, we've talked about it as a club, because we're in the SCPL, like we never practice, we just sort of turn up and, you know, we play in different venues and in different surfaces, but, you know, preparing for the tournament is one thing, and we're talking about going down to Basingstoke to play on the tennis courts, which is similar to the David Lloyd ones, and then to use the ball that we'll be using on the day, because it does tend to go a bit quicker. And I noticed that, where else did I notice that? Over there, when the Premier Pickleball League were down in near Alton, Kingsbury, I think it is. There's a tennis club down there, and it's like concrete surface they were playing on, and my wife and I played down there in a mixed doubles, and I said you need to stand about a couple of yards further back than you normally would, because the ball just come off the surface so quickly. So sorry, we digress slightly from the paddles. So where were we? So the carbon fiber is obviously what it's made of.
Yep.
Thickness, more about touch.
I can give you a run from thickness.
Please do.
Let me just talk about, I think what would really help is just giving you an overview of how the game's transitioned and how changed. So initially, paddle brands started with graphite. Right. So you saw a lot of graphite paddles, really good forgiveness, all-round playability, they call it. And then they were like, right, we need more pop from paddles. So fiberglass was then
So when you
introduced.
Say pop, for those that don't know what pop is.
Pop is basically,
it's not your American dad.
No.
Pop.
No. When the ball hits the paddle and it comes back off,
it's
pop, basically.
Without putting any effort in.
Yeah. And so fiberglass would enable you to do that. So brands opted then for fiberglass paddles, which the sweet spot was a lot smaller, but what you could generate basically without putting effort in was much better than what you could generate through a graphite paddle.
So is it true a good test of a paddle, then, if you want, is just lay it on the floor and just drop a ball on it?
Oh, I've not heard that, but I mean,
and when you see how high it bounces.
I mean, you could do that. I've not done it.
You know, but maybe that's a way of finding out if they've got decent sweet spots. I'm not sure. I just might have been one of those videos that someone said just lay it.
I mean, there's lots of tools, techniques and stuff people do out there. But yeah, so fiberglass is where they kind of took it.
Yeah.
And then the likes of brands like Carbon, Electrum, then started trialing this T700 carbon fiber, because the biggest thing with fiberglass paddles were they'd have to put the spray grit on them, because to get spin, you'd need to put spray grit on, and obviously that would wear up over time.
Right. Like sandpaper, but eventually will wear
down. Yeah.
Right.
I'm going to use
Can you respray them? Can they be resprayed?
You shouldn't respray them. I don't think there's anything out there that you can respray them. You probably could get away with it here in the UK.
Okay.
But in America, where they rub their hand over your paddle when you compete to test the grit on it to make sure it's within the legal parameters.
Oh, I see. So is there a bit of skullduggery going on in the States then?
So I've seen a few videos, and there's some guys that I really like watching on Instagram and YouTube called Friday Pickleball. And they did a recent one where they just attached sandpaper to the front of their paddle and just saw how much spin they could get of it. So there's some really cool videos of people doing it.
Maybe I'll try that. Mm. Just get old paddle, stick some sandpaper.
You might be able to get away with it at competitions here in the UK. SEPL maybe next time. Go have a grit sandpaper.
I don't think Steve Beale will pull us up on it, would he?
No, maybe.
Anyway, sorry, carry on.
So he then moved into carbon fiber paddles.
Yeah.
Which typically have great amount of spin, so that spin on the face would last a lot longer. You can get a paddle eraser, which is like a rubber block basically that you can clean the paddle, so the spin stays on the paddle for longer.
Your paddle, sort of getting rid of the rubbish that's on there maybe, and just
exactly
okay
yeah
didn't
so
know that.
That didn't exist on fiberglass paddles and graphite paddles, so you've got elements that you can actually use to clean the paddle and keep it those spin numbers up. And spin being a massive part of like the professional pickleball.
Well, see now, spin. So we've had a couple of lessons.
I saw with Rob.
We've had a couple of lessons with Thadia as well. And she's come and coached us at the club. And she was saying, you know, that she didn't encourage spin. Even Rob was saying in coaching, there isn't anything about spin in the coaching manuals and stuff. And obviously, I think everybody who probably comes from a racket sport will probably want to try and do top spin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because obviously at the higher level or even the manufacturers realize people do want to spin a lot more.
Yeah.
And therefore having the right tools to do that is important. But yeah, I try not to spin too much because it increases error, you know, especially down in the dink zone. They're all sort of saying, you know, that's where you might cause errors. Just getting the idea of being patient, getting the ball over.
Yeah.
So but obviously it sounds like there is this need to have a bit more.
I mean, certainly with where the brands are going,
spinning. Right?
The paddles they're releasing now are just so gritty. Like I was watching something earlier around the brand new Yola paddles, which are being released this week, and a guy had a T-shirt on. And one of the new paddles, and basically just put the paddle on it and it just didn't move. It was that gritty. So it was like stuck.
It's obvious to the feel. So like one of this, there's nothing on there.
No.
So it is like sandpaper.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to have to look at a new paddle.
Yeah, there's a lot to choose from.
But that's,
that's the difficulty.
That's the difficulty, isn't it? And the price range obviously varies quite a lot. But
It does. So you go from anything from 0 to 50 is usually the kind of entry bracket, like I paid, and I'm sure you probably did with your first panel, we offer those, and so does Amazon and places like that. And then you've got the 50 to 100 range, which is you can get some really good paddles in, but they're more like your recreational style paddles with maybe one or two performance ones. And then 100 to 150 tends to be a good sweet spot for a lot of people. And then you've got the players that want the £250 paddles, which like top performance.
Five pluses.
Five plus, yeah. The five pluses.
Or the 4.5 pluses,
Or the 2.5s that think they're 5.0s like myself, so.
You're not a 2.0, you're a 3.8, by the way.
You've been looking at my 2.0.
I'm telling you, yours is the same as mine. No. But actually, yours is slightly higher. I think you're 3.88, mine's 3.8.
I'm surprised, to be honest. I've not had some very good games on Dupre. So.
Well, the Dupre thing is a bit strange at the moment, isn't it? It depends where you're playing and how you... Ours has just come through our clubs and unfortunately, I don't think Steve on his tournaments puts your ratings in, does he?
So no.
I think it's only places like the Nationals and the Open, isn't it? And I don't know what other tournaments in the country where you can do it. I know Steve did a Dupre Dash once where all your results went in to Dupre. But yeah, because I think it's important. It's a good balancer, isn't it? The idea being, I think Andre Agassi, I've said this before, that Andre Agassi and his friends have bought the business Duper, haven't they?
Or, yeah, yeah, invested in it, yep.
And I heard him say that, you know, it's if you were, wherever you go, if you were to go to a club, unfortunately it doesn't seem to work here in the UK because we don't have that sort of, just walk into a club one Tuesday night because we don't have the venues or the homes. But in America, obviously, you probably could turn up and put your name on a board and say, right, my name's John and I'm a 3.8, and someone else turn up and write 3.8, and you've got a partner that you can play at sort of a level playing field, and genuinely, as opposed to perhaps some of the sandbaggers that go to the tournaments here looking for medals, saying they're 3.5s. But yeah, so how did you get yours? Is it through the club, or have you been at the Open?
So yeah, so I played at the Open last year and got sandbagged. Someone absolutely smashed me. And
singles, doubles?
Singles. To be honest, I like playing above my level. It's really like a really weird thing.
No, I think the only way you learn is being challenged and being pushed.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know why I get absolutely smashed. I'm like, let's do it again. But so I played, just entries. It was the first tournament I'd ever played. Pretty much in anything other than football when I was a kid. And the guy must have been at least a four or five, and he was ripping forehands past me and didn't really know what to do. I think I got stuffed like 11-3 or something like that. So I got 3 points, which was good.
I was going to say, 3 points is not bad, is it? Because hasn't come out yet, but I had a Louis Laville down, and I was talking to Louis.
Great guy.
And I said to Louis, I said, the way the game is, because singles and doubles, they are very different.
They are,
and singles reminds me more of tennis, the way it's played. And he said, and I said, one tip, if you were playing singles, what do you think? He said, be aggressive.
Yeah.
Just try and win the point as quickly as possible. He said, that's the way to do it. Hit the ball hard. And I think he has two different paddles when he's playing doubles and when he's playing singles.
Yeah.
I think he has a thin one for power.
Yeah,
And then for doubles, he has a more control paddle. But that was sort of the tip. And I think that's, I fancy having a go at the singles because I think it'd be great to try, but just trying to work out the strategy and the tactics.
Yeah, I actually went away with Louis and the top players a while back. Went to Spain and played in the Mediterranean Open. It was an amazing experience, but the wind was, I've never seen conditions like it. The wind
was this recently? Was this not that long ago?
It was probably a month or 2 months ago.
Yeah, I thought, yeah.
And Louis was there and he was like, just serve it as hard as you can and return it as hard as you can because the wind is going to hold it up.
Yeah.
And he won the singles because he was just putting everything he could into the first three shots.
Fast hands, Louis.
Amazing hands to watch on the
have
court.
You seen his video on
against
the squash ball?
Yeah,
he's really got quick hands.
Have you tried that?
I haven't. I tried the other day on the wall and the ball was going everywhere. You don't realize how good that control is.
I know.
And then he started doing all of that.
Particularly the one where he hits it down and then I don't know how he does it, to be honest.
Well, he used to play squash. So I think that helps as well. You know, because there are these squash players do this sort of routine where they bang off all the walls and practice.
Okay,
they stay there in the middle just doing this and it seems to go everywhere and back to them. But he's got amazingly quick hands.
Yeah.
So why are you not at the US Open then?
I don't know, to be honest. We're just so busy trying to keep up with things at the moment.
Right.
I would absolutely love to be at the US Open, but
Playing or selling?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of selling going on out there, I think, with the likes of Pickleball Central, Just Paddles, and they're all American-based. They're massive and multi, like, 100 employees sort of businesses.
Your humble three.
The humble three, yeah.
But do the work of 100,
It feels like we do, definitely.
Good for you, though.
But I would love to be out there, obviously, selling, getting paddles into the hands of players. But at the same time, being able to play and being able to say you played in the US Open is just, it's like
next
a notch on the belt. Next year.
I'll come hopefully. With you.
Doubles?
Hey, mate, why not? We are at 3.8. We're playing the fours, though. We'll go fours.
Four, five.
I've got a new part. Well, I haven't never played yet in the doubles in a tournament yet. So I've got a guy called Paul Hay Green. I don't know, you might know Paul from Aldershot.
I don't know Paul, no.
But we're going into the Open and going to play in the over 50s four.
Oh, cool. Okay.
We'll see how it goes. So we're going to come. So the idea of having a practice was I saw your advert actually about down at Southampton.
Oh, wicked! Yeah.
So that's why. So I thought, all right, Paul, because we haven't played together, so should we come down? So we're coming down to your 50,
oh, amazing.
50 plus on the 8th, Sunday the 19th, I think it is.
That's yeah. So Saturday and Sunday. Yeah.
Yeah. So Sunday
both days.
And once again, I got it all wrong. So I booked myself in on the 18 plus on the Saturday.
Okay.
Yeah. Or 4 plus, and then Paul had done the right day. And then I had to have this conversation with Steve saying, I've got it wrong again, Steve. Can you please get me transferred over? So, yeah, that'd be great. So that's another tournament that you're supporting or running. Is this one of yours or Steve's? Or
it's a collab between ourselves and Steve. Steve is an amazing, like the amount of events he has run. He's
certainly in the last couple of months. I know he's probably his tanks on a little bit of empty at the moment.
I know. Every weekend, yeah. I think he's somewhere different across the country. And they're not like, let's keep them south there. Let's go up
Nottingham,
to Loughborough and
Nottingham
and places like that. And I mean, fair play to Simon as well. The team are just amazing. The amount of stuff they've done for the sport, particularly getting the amount of players they do to each event and just offering them chances to play is just awesome.
Yeah, it is great because it is getting to that point now. You can pick an event most weekends if you wanted to find one, isn't it? Just need to get their results on the Dupre.
That
would help a lot of people. I think it would encourage more, I think. I don't know, because I think maybe for some people that I think one of the problems might be that I think he's not got a category over 4.5. He's got 4+.
For the tournament we're running, we've got a 4.5+ category.
4.5+.
Yeah. So not a 5.0 open. Yeah.
No, but 4.5+. So the fours can be competitive.
Yeah.
And then if you think you're a 5 or a 4.5 and above, you've got that as well. Well, that's good. But I suppose these things, excuse me, over a period of time, they balance themselves out when people actually start being sensible about which category they should play in. And
you always get a few which are
sandbaggers.
Sandbaggers, yeah.